Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Greetings and welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Tapson. There is a novel I've often recommended to readers and listeners called Submission, at least in its English translation, because it was originally in French, by the provocative French novelist Michel Houellebecq. It dates from 2015, but it's more chillingly relevant and important now than it was 10 years ago. It features a literature professor at the Sorbonne named François, who is the very embodiment of Europe's secularized decadence. In the book, a red-green alliance between a fictional socialist party and a Muslim Brotherhood party transforms the country's political landscape. And so François finds himself living in an Islamic patriarchy in which polygamy is legal. All teachers like himself are required to be Muslim. And his university is renamed the Islamic University of Paris-Sorbonne. François observes in the book, Europe had reached a point of such putrid decomposition, thanks to this wave of Islamic immigrants, that it could no longer save itself, any more than 5th century Rome could have done. Forgive the spoiler, but with no moral or spiritual center to ground him, François is easily seduced by the foregone conclusion of Muslim domination. His submission, hence the title, is symbolic of Europe's ongoing surrender to an ascendant Islamic fundamentalism. The end of the book is every bit as chilling as Winston Smith's embrace of Big Brother at the conclusion of Orwell's 1984. France's slow-motion suicide has been disturbing to watch, to say the least, but there was a highly successful and controversial nonfiction book that came out in France the year before Houellebecq's novel, which dissected France's disappearing national identity and cultural identity, and it absolutely demolished prevailing left-wing narratives about the country's modern history. And it has just been released in an updated translation for English-speaking readers. It's called The Suicide of France by Eric Zemmour, who is a controversial right-wing politician there. And by right-wing, of course, I just mean that he holds common-sense positions. I have the translator of the book here at The Right Take today, and we're going to talk about that book, why it's important not just for France, but for Americans, and about whether it's too late for France, Europe, and the West, or whether our civilization can be resuscitated, revived, and reinvigorated. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss this conversation. And don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you don't already, so you don't miss any of the compelling conversations we are having here. Don't touch that dial. My guest today at the intersection of politics and culture is a senior fellow at the Center for Renewing America and a fellow at the Institute for Philosophy, Technology, and Politics. He's the translator of at least a couple of books from French, including one we're going to talk about today, the English edition of which is called The Suicide of France by Eric Zemmour. Nathan Penkoski, welcome to the Right Take Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a delight to be here.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to talking to you. Let's begin with your background. What is it? How did you come to be a French translator and something of an expert on French politics?
That's a good question. Well, I grew up in Canada and went to one of the good things that, one of the only good things you could say, that Pierre Trudeau set up, which was he put a big initiative to get bilingual education across the whole country. So I actually went to a French immersion school. My mother's family's from Quebec, but we grew up in a home that spoke English. But we were able to go to a school where everyone spoke French. The teachers, I should say, the students, not so much, a different environment. But nevertheless, it worked for a while, that kind of arrangement where you learn French, and even if you're amongst English speakers. So it was always there in the background, a kind of that linguistic connection. I went over in my 20s to England to study. That's where I did my master's and doctorate in political theory at Oxford. Wasn't that interested in, formally in French topics, but became more interested in French political thought, living over there, having a few friends in Paris and in France, talking with them, going to see them. And Started following French politics, and around that time there was an up-and-coming television personality writer that a friend of mine encouraged me to read. So I picked up Le Destin Français. This is another one of Éric Zemmour's books, kind of tells a history of France. This was just after Trump was elected too, so obviously topics of immigration, you know, the direction of our own political leadership, or the lack thereof, was very much part of the atmosphere. I'd moved to the U.S. then by 2017, but was still following the French scene, and people would ask me to write about it, talk about it, and from there, it kind of, what initially was a sort of side hobby, became something that I kept being asked to talk about and to explain what was going on more and more. So here I am today.
And what goes on at the Center for Renewing America and also the other institute you work for?
Yeah, so the first one is the center founded by Russell Vogt in 2021. He's now, of course, in charge of OMB, so in the Trump administration. I'd say the priority of CRA, one of the issues that we focus on is trying to counteract and roll back woke and weaponized government, as we say. So the ideological takeover of large swaths of the federal bureaucracy, and trying to defund that or limit its influence. And then the weaponization part is the apparatus of lawfare, the apparatus that is designed to punish you through a malicious legal process, or indeed to spy on you, see in a fishing expedition to see if you've been guilty of anything, which we discovered Arctic Frost, the operation that Jack Smith had set up. I'd actually targeted CRA, had targeted his bank accounts, and to do precisely that. That was before my time, I perhaps was spared, at least then, but that's the kind of reality. So CRA, I think, is an organization well poised to counteract that, and also to provide, I think most importantly, is to provide a new paradigm for conservative institutions to think about what our conflicts are. I think it's right to say we're in a cold civil war. Yes. One side is not playing by the rules, and they need to be held to account for that. And we need to let more people know that they're not playing by the rules, and use our time in government to defund and delegitimize those institutions that are part of that. Part of that apparatus. So that's CRA. And then just in a sentence with my other affiliation, that's an organization with St. Patrick's Seminary in Palo Alto. And that's more of my philosophical, theological hat. So we'll host some conferences there to discuss technology and more what we call civilizational level questions, and as well as just Catholic social thought overall. So that's the point of that institution.
What first drew you to translate the book that Americans can now read as The Suicide of France? How did you get connected in that way?
Yeah, so as I said, I've been reading Zemmour and following him for almost a decade now, I suppose. Yeah, I guess about a decade. So I knew his importance. I knew his significance in the French landscape. And I think the part of the reason I became interested in that, but also I think why his 2022 presidential campaign. So for those of you who don't know, he ran for president in 2022. Even though that campaign failed, it got a lot of attention in the U.S. And I think what I realized during the course of that time was just that a lot of the issues that the French were facing, a lot of the issues that the Europeans were facing, were also issues that maybe at an earlier stage, Americans would have found unintelligible or would have viewed it as sort of a problem over there, now began to realize it was a problem over here as well. So I think a national or civilizational identity crisis, the sense of failed elite, and I think notably the sense that the elite failed because of the way that they adopted uncritically a paradigm of multiculturalism, and which included mass immigration, and of course included an accommodationist attitude towards Islam. So Zemmour had been someone who had forthrightly, directly, courageously talked about that for his whole political career, and the suicide of France, that book, had been the one that had put him on the map. Mm-hmm. It had been actually a little bit of background context here. It sold, I should say, that books in, there's been a couple books in the last 40 years in France that have done very, very well. I mean, of course, nonfiction here, right? Yeah. Kind of political commentary. At the start of the 1980s, it was the Gulag Archipelago by Solzhenitsyn. When that was released, it was actually first released in France outside of, that was the first place where it had been released outside of the Russian edition. Mm-hmm. And it had sold something now I've forgotten the number, 2 million copies, 3 million? It had sold something immense like that within just a few years. So it did very, very well. The next book that had a similar effect was a book that was kind of a tell-all or revelation about François Mitterrand's president. So François Mitterrand was the socialist president in charge through the 1980s into the 1990s. And by the end of that era, it was kind of a, you know, the socialists had entered power with a lot of idealism behind them, I think similar to the way that people viewed Tony Blair and Britain. But by the end of it, there was a kind of exhaustion and cynicism. And that book had also sold something like 1 million copies at the time, another political event that really, or a literary event, I should say, that tapped into the political anxieties of the period, that the socialists didn't really believe in anything anymore. It was just kind of a almost a nihilistic party that exists just to win one election after the other. No big literary event until 2014, when Suicide of France, Le Suicide Français, was released, when it sold in just a few months 500,000 copies. And that was I think you can also think about too the decline of literacy. You know, people don't read as much, but still in that time it had done to do that well was a very impressive event. So I thought that if someone needed to read something of Zemmour in English, and of course nothing had been translated of his, this was the book that needed to be done. And I spoke with him about it, and he'd always lamented that though his other books had been translated into numerous languages, including Le Suicide, no English translator had ever picked up this book. So That's when I decided to sign up and do it.
I'm glad that you did. I imagine just from a translator's perspective that dealing with his writing style and maintaining his polemical force and tone had to have been a challenge.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think to make this translation work, I really, I didn't want to have any footnotes or translator's notes. Because I wanted it to capture the same kind of energy and fluidity that his own journalistic style has. And fortunately, his writing is very clear, very accessible, so it wasn't too hard to make that adjustment. And we decided, him and myself, early on, that the chapters that spoke that were a little too insular to France, you know, popular culture, song references that Americans wouldn't know, just to leave those chapters out. To keep the main flow of the argument going. So that worked very well. You know, sometimes doing the translation, I might need to add a little additional epithet to explain a personality that may be well known in France, but not that well known for the English reader. You know, an additional note that this person was at the time was Minister of the Interior or something like that. Before he became president, just those sort of little additions. But I didn't have to do that too much. So by and large, I just tried to represent as faithfully as I could his style to keep the reader who probably knows, the reader who picks up that book probably is interested in France, knows something about it, but may not know a whole lot. And that was kind of the ideal audience for this.
And speaking of audience, why should Americans read this book and find it important?
Well, I think that one of the things that people get from reading it is the sense that France's problems our problems or our challenges. And in a way, it's you can pick it up and feel slightly reassured if you grew up in North America, or especially in the US, to think that some of those problems that he names, we've done a better job of handling. So just to run through, I think, some of the big themes of the book. One is what I already mentioned, the multicultural side. Another is the kind of economic policies that were embraced in the run-up to the European Union, which were really here about surrendering, and this is key, I think, so you don't just think it's a tirade against against having a free market or something like that. Mm-hmm. The design of the European Union, the way that economic policies work, were about surrendering political control over the economy, subjecting yourself to a regulatory apparatus that voters and elected officials have no control over. So the multicultural problem, the problem of that surrender of political control, the rise of what is called in French, the gouvernement des juges, you could say the government by the judges, or judicial activism. That's something that is very much part of the French problem. I think that last one is something that Americans have done a better job controlling, especially in recent years, or at least there have been appointments to the court that have helped helped handle some of that problem. That said, the multicultural one, I think, cuts very deep and mm-hmm. And is very much a mirror to our own situation. And then the fourth issue that comes up particularly towards the latter part of the book is, of course, Islamization. And that's something that we don't have as big of a problem yet in this country, but yet. Unfortunately, we're on that trajectory. The you know, people say the demographic numbers are very, very low, but and as a percentage of the population, that's true, but it's about where they concentrate, and numerically, it's a significant amount, right? You may 1 million is a small number in a country of 370, 380. But if those 1 million are in New York, right, they do change the electoral landscape, as we've seen recently. So that's the kind of reality that we have to brace ourselves for. And that's, I think, why it's very important to pick up this book and read it, because you get a mirror to our own problems, but you also get a kind of anticipation, a looking glass to the trajectory that that we're on if we are continue to be governed by feckless elites who don't face this problem. And that's, I think, the last theme of the book that's very important, is the way it's set up is to show you that after May 1968, the famous student riots of May 1968, the French elite really lost confidence in themselves. So the book begins with the death of de Gaulle, who had been in charge of France from 1958 to 1969 when he resigns, and then he dies a year later in 1970. It begins with his funeral. And what this is meant to show you is a crisis of authority that has just pervaded the French system. We don't have an exact equivalent of that in the United States, but I think there's a similar sense of I think the closest comparison would be something like how I think there are two ways one could come at it. One is the sense that, at least in the 50s and 60s, you know, if you have an older memory, you remember a kind of social stability, at least before the latter part of the 60s, before the Vietnam War went awry, before the race riots and so forth. You might you might recall that. But the other thing, I think, would be the kind of cultural and political unity and authority that we had during the Cold War, a sense that we're all in agreement on this. And of course, nothing ever has been able to replace that since then. So that's not quite the same kind of crisis of authority that is represented by the loss of a single figure, you know, the death of de Gaulle. But that's a similar kind of anxiety that I think hangs over our system. The French have the loss of purpose that came from the death of de Gaulle. I think we have the loss of purpose from seeing the fracture of our kind of post-war confidence break down.
Yeah, in your foreword to the English edition, you write that The Suicide of France is the book that broke the spell of progressivism in France. How did it do that?
Well, I think what it did is it gave people permission to understand and to say out loud that the trajectory their country was on was not a good one. And that was a very important thing because I think it's important for people outside of France to see that the country is dispositionally quite conservative in terms of its habits, its dispositions, its mindset. And yet, for a couple of different reasons, it was governed by people who wanted to take it in a very different direction. One of the big ones being a kind of shame for the past and shame for oneself. So you had a deliberate project to forget and abandon everything that had taken place kind of before the 1970s. And that there was always a deep anxiety about doing that, and a sense that was not the right way to go. I think one thing too that we forget about, or at least we may not know about if we don't talk regularly with Europeans, is, you know, at every stage of the European project, this project of building the European Union, you were always promised some grand benefit. Oh, this is going to bring in hundreds of thousands of new jobs. This is going to handle our economic stagnation issues. This is going to turn us into a kind of great continental powerhouse, a great bloc that is able to compete with the United States. You were always given these great promises of what would come if only you surrendered a little more of your national sovereignty, if only you surrendered a little more of your national identity. And none of those ever materialized. By the 2010s, the anxiety for that was building, and Zemmour saw that and saw that he could write a very long book about it. It is quite a long book, and that's why it's impressive. It's sold 500,000 copies. The French edition is 140,000, maybe 150,000 words. So that's by English standards, pretty long. but that was, I think, what he tapped into that. And I think that the French landscape has never been quite the same since. People disagree vehemently with him. They might agree vehemently with him. They might agree with caveats or quibble points here and there. But it really did shift the political landscape in the country. And change the terms of what you would talk about politically.
And interestingly, Zemmour sees the United States as at least partially, maybe largely responsible for some of that the cultural revolution in France, that post-1968 revolution, some of that weakening of French identity. With the rise of victimhood politics, for example. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic because you might expect, and I think there's some justice for thinking this, that he would do what is a common French trope, right? You blame the United States for all your problems, or you try to. The other side of it is you try to develop such a strong contrast between the United States and yourself to try to pretend you're immune from all the terrible tendencies that go on in the United States. So yes. So you contrast the darkness of the United States to the light of, you know, European social democracy or whatever. And he tries to navigate a way to move between both of them without succumbing to either. So in the first instance, I think he is very interested, or in the latter, let me start with the last point. He's very interested in the kind of the hypocrisy of the French elites who would say, oh, we're developing this new social democracy, this new political form that's going to have all these extra protections for the workers against globalization, against the forces of globalization. Well, they were doing their best to strip French industries out, to sell them off, to allow for all these foreign buyers to come in. So in that instance, he wants to show the hypocrisy of people who try to distinguish themselves from the U.S., the U.S. bad, France good because it represents a kind of left of center social democracy, the U.S. bad because it's Wild West capitalism, that sort of thing. Yeah. And so that's one way he does it. And then the other way he does it, and this goes into the second point, is he shows how fascinated the French were with American culture. So he tries to tell the story of the Reagan period, the 1980s, through the infatuation that Americans or French had for the American show Dallas, which incidentally, I'm too young to remember that show.
I'm not.
I didn't know about it at all. And so I was asking Zemmour about this. I thought, I'd love to look this up. What is this show? And he said, no, you have to understand it. It was so popular in France. And I said, yeah, I understand. I looked the numbers up for the US, and these are some of the most watched television show, television moments in American history, like up there with the moon landing. And he said, no, it's also the same in France, which was really astounding. So he wants to show that kind of cultural infatuation. And here, I think what he wants to suggest, he doesn't want to suggest this is a, it was a cunning plot of the, of an American elite. It was rather a demonstration that the French had lost confidence in their own civilizational, their own cultural heritage. And so they were latching out for something, and that just meant latching on to what was the popular thing at the time. So the cultural shift that takes place there is one where it's not about blaming the Americans for what happened. It's rather showing that the interest in the more vulgar elements of American culture, or have you, the pop culture side, was actually a demonstration of French weakness. Their sense of shame for their past, the sense that they were ashamed for what came before, and that meant that they were going to be swept up by what was fashionable at the moment.
Let's talk about the Islamization of France for a moment, which has obviously intensified in the decade or so since Zemmour first published this book. I'm going to assume that you have read Michel Houellebecq's novel, Submission.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, coincidentally, or perhaps not, Submission came out the year after Zemmour's book, I think, and it describes this near-future France which has succumbed to Islam, not with a bang, but with a whimper, simply because the West has lost the spiritual vitality to assert its values. Would Zemmour and you agree with that? I don't want to identify you too closely with Zemmour, but I want to get both your takes on it, I guess.
Yeah. And for the purposes of this, I mean, if Zemmour were here, I feel like I'm standing in for him a bit, because his English just isn't good enough to do the podcast. So, no, I think that it resonates very closely with his own diagnosis. I think the distinction between Houellebecq and Zemmour has to do a little bit with the fact that Houellebecq sees what he's doing as a kind of a broader diagnosis of France's social problems, but also doing a little bit of black humor and satire. One theme in Submission that I think people don't pick up on necessarily, because it's a little understated, but for French readers there, is it's actually a kind of, it's making fun of the French right, for their inefficacy, because when the Muslims take power, they implement a number of policies that the French right had actually dreamed of doing, you know, pro-family policies, getting obscenity under control, the talk about developing a kind of Mediterranean Union, that was a Sarkozy talking point in the early 2000s, that he would do that. So Houellebecq is making fun of the French right a bit, to say, basically say, like, look, you guys are so pathetic that that it takes Islam to implement your agenda. So it's a little, he's making fun of them a bit for that. Zemmour definitely agrees with that diagnosis. I think the side of it that he wants to develop in addition is that isn't necessarily picked up in the novel and in Houellebecq's own writings, is it also pertains to the problem of the way the French state has developed. And this has been an important, I think, evolution in Zemmour's thinking, because when he was younger, he was actually a Mitterrand voter, a socialist in the 1980s. In the younger days, a lot of his solutions were, we just need a stronger state again, the state has become too weak. And in recent years, he's been much more interested in identifying the paralysis that is developed by this bloated bureaucracy. And his argument is that in France, you're always going to have a larger government because of the divisions that have been there for some time. But, you know, in De Gaulle's era, that meant just over 20% of GDP being up to assigned to state expenditure, whereas now it's maybe three times that. So you could even go back to a so-called status figure like De Gaulle and still have a level of state expenditure as a percentage of GDP that that would actually be lower than the United States presently has, as well as all European countries. So that's a side that is a little different from Welbeck's social diagnosis, which is I think rooted very much in the sense that our materialist civilization has ripped out our sense of meaning and turned everything into a kind of commodity, and even intimate sexual acts are also just subject to commodification and don't really are subject to that same logic. That's a theme in Welbeck. For Zemmour, I think he wants to draw attention also to a transformation in the way that our government system has worked that has enabled these problems, which go beyond just a kind of social critique to deliberate policy choices, policy failures that have taken place in the past 50 years. So that's where I see the distinction between the two of them on that. But yeah, you're exactly right. Submission is a novel that that speaks exactly well. It actually was released on the same day of the Charlie Hebdo attacks.
Yes.
Really, really had a great sense of timing.
Yes, in a grim sort of way. Yeah, I think it's a very, very important novel for people to read. I recommend it frequently. Zemmour's book was, as we mentioned, originally published in 2014, so it's been 12 years now. Looking back from 2026, would you agree that it's pretty clear that his diagnosis of French, quote-unquote, suicide is, and the West's, is more relevant now than ever?
I think so, yeah. And that's, I think, partly why you can bring it out and you can still see the salience of what he's spoken about. And I think it's also, just to use the French example, it's a very good one. The country did... during that time, become much more, say, aware of the problems of Islamization, of immigration, but you ended up with this lackluster, youthful president who, Macron, is who I'm speaking of, who on his own terms, his agendas failed. He was supposed to fix the economic problems, and instead he blew up the size of government. He was supposed to offer a new kind of political path forward from the failures of the old parties that would provide a fresh face and leave the figures of the past behind. And who now is his most likely successor? It's Marine Le Pen. Le Pen is a name that's been around in French politics since the 1980s. So it's really I think a marked failure of a decade of leadership in France. And of course there are parallels elsewhere. So it does seem like the political system there has been blocked in serious ways that exacerbate the very problems that he's speaking of.
Nathan, I hear many conservatives say it's over for France and for Europe. Demography is destiny, and it's just simply too late to reverse the decline. Do you believe that pessimism is valid? Does Zemmour and do you, again, believe that there's still time for a political solution to the problem of Islam in France, or has civil war just become inevitable at this point?
Well, the Zemmour in 2021, he gave a speech at a conference listing out all the problems. And he finished it with a quote from the French Catholic writer, Georges Bernanos, who's maybe best known for his novel, Diary of a Country Priest.
Yes.
Beautiful novel. I very much recommend it. And the one of the themes that in Bernanos' writings is that it's very important to distinguish between optimism and pessimism on the one hand and hope and despair. People yes. assume optimism is the same as hope. People assume pessimism is the same as despair. And that's not true. In fact, what he wants to argue, what Bernanos wants to argue, is that the real sense of optimism is despair overcome. It's when the true sense of optimism comes from that sense of confronting despair and overcoming it. And that means that you can't just associate optimism with hope. That's a fake association. You need to have a kind of pessimism that it prepares the ground for hope. And so Zemmour finished off his speech by quoting that precise phrase from Zemmour, and then from Benanos, and then he notes, "And if you are here listening to me, then I know that you want to overcome." That you want to overcome despair, and I think that's the proper attitude here, is to be fully cognizant of the pessimism of how poor the situation is, but that does not entail a loss of hope. There are always political options on the table. There are always possibilities that are available, and those are the kinds of things that you need to be ready to take up. Does that mean that the risk of violence, the risk of civil war becomes much greater? Yes, I think that's true, and that might be part of recognizing the reality that one is in. But I think that does not mean that one just assumes the attitude of despair and assume that all is lost and there's nothing left. From that, there are always options on the table. It's just a question of what those kinds of options are.
Zemmour, as you mentioned, ran for president of France in 2022. Is he planning another run?
Well, I think you'd have to ask him that directly. but he is the leader of a political party, so I think it is likely that he would do such a thing again. It's also the landscape is, I think, a little more unstable than we might suggest, particularly because we do have, it's not clear how much, to be brief about it. You have three blocks. You have the left-wing bloc, which is moving in the direction of the Islamo-gauchisme, so the red-green alliance, yes. The alliance between Islam and the left. You have the center bloc, which will be the remnants of Macron, of Macron's political party, and then you have the right-wing bloc. But all these three blocs compete amongst themselves for the same set of voters, and that's the part that is unclear. Is where the voters who lean right might decide to move, say, in an instance, or where the voters who are close to the center might decide to lean. So that means, I think, you have a volatile electorate where it's a little hard to anticipate. And then I think what's also key in the French scene is you may have someone who emerges as a clear winner in the presidential election, but the kinds of divisions that persist like that mean the legislative elections for who actually controls the majority in the legislature and who gets to form the government that handles most of domestic affairs, that's also going to be extremely volatile. So that's a place where a smaller political party could do a lot of work. And then the last thing I'd add to that too is that a lot of these candidacies, what makes them significant isn't necessarily how many votes they win, but how they shape the terms of the debate, how they change the terms of the discussion. And that's where I think Zemmour's perspective on the problem of judicial activism, which in the French context, just there hasn't been many who've even articulated that as an issue. That perspective is very important. The particular strategies that he uses to deal with the immigration question, which include remigration, these are also questions that that people have been hesitant to take up. By running in the race, even if you don't win, if you present those questions, you are helping reshape the political environment. And that in itself is important.
Yes. His party is the Reconquête Party, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Very interesting and disturbing, too. Nathan, how can people keep up with what you are working on?
Thanks. Yeah, so you can follow me on X with my name, N. Pinkowski. I also have a Substack called Lament for the Nations.
Yes. I actually just subscribed to that this morning. It looks like it's right up my alley.
Thank you. Yeah. So I usually use that to post what writing and projects that I'm working on. Whenever I write something, I put it on over there. But that's the easiest way to follow me. I also write sometimes for First Things, for Compact, amongst other publications, Claremont Review of Books, for instance, places like that. And actually, on Welbeck, I just published a piece this week comparing Jean Espy's Camp of the Saints to Michel Houellebecq's submission for Lyceum.
Okay.
That's a newer initiative that I think it's been launched, the Lyceum site for independent thinking is the subtitle. But if you want to read something on submission, a shorter piece on submission, that's a place to go to see that.
Yeah, interesting. I would look forward to reading that. And listeners, I urge you to pick up The Suicide of France by Eric Zemmour, translated by Nathan Penkoski. It's really an important and relevant read. And Nathan, thank you so much for coming to The Right Take.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you haven't already. And if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you.